You're listening to the Study Clicks podcast, your number one source for junior cycle and leaving cert tips. We make exams easier. Welcome back to the Study Clicks podcast. This week, I am joined by a very special guest, Linda Dolan, who is a home ec teacher who has done lots of work with Study Clicks, helping us create really, really helpful resources that will help you do better in your exams, whether that's junior cycle or leaving cert. But we have Linda on today to talk about a guide that she wrote for us called How to Get a Distinction in Your Junior Cycle Home Ec. She also wrote two guides on this CBA 1 and CBA 2, how to get better at those, how to improve your grades, just good tips if that's what you want to do, if you want to do well in home ec. So without further ado, I will welcome Linda onto the podcast. Linda, how are you doing?
I'm great. Hi, Nessa. It's brilliant to be back on.
Thank you so much. Linda and I tried to record this once and
it was a bit of a disaster.
Yeah, it was a disaster. The internet let us down and she was very, very good to come on to this again. And we'll have to get you back on to do a leaving cert version as well. So it's never ending, Linda, the recording.
Why not?
So I suppose a good place to start, Linda, is just to give us a little bit of background about yourself, who you are and like your history with teaching and home ec as a subject.
No problem at all. So I'm originally a Cavan woman, a proud Cavan woman. I went to Breffni College where I had two fabulous home ec teachers, Lorraine Pratt and Claire Brown Riley. And I think really from there, my love of home economics grew. So I continued on then to St Angela's in Sligo, did 4 years there, and then I got a job up in Buncrana in Scolwurra, another fabulous spot. And I'm currently working in Mercy College in Sligo, where I'm very happy. So yeah, that's really my background. I've taught home ec since I have left college, and it's definitely a love of mine. And it's a subject that I think students really enjoy, especially because of the practical element. And it's great, I suppose we will be talking about this later, but with junior cycle, there is definitely more of an emphasis on the practical element now, because in the old junior cert, as it was called, the cooking exam was only worth either 35 or 45%, depending on your whatever level you were doing, ordinary or higher, but it's now 50%. So I think that drive towards the practical side definitely attracting more students to the course and to do home ec, which is brilliant. Yeah, so really that's my background.
That's your background. Yeah, I love that. Like, I think home ec was up there, I think, with one of my favorite subjects in school because it was so practical and like the bits of cooking and sewing that you got to do as well. So yeah, definitely. Yeah. There might be even be people listening to this podcast now who aren't actually doing home ec, but like deciding whether or not they want to do that. That could be a, so you really like sold home ec as a good subject. But I think a good place, if we like get into the bones of this podcast, which is like how to do well, I think a good place to start is how the subject overall is assessed. So there's like including the CBAs and the projects. Do you want to give a little rundown of where the marks are going?
Yeah, no problem. So as we were saying there, 50% is your cooking exam, 50% is your written exam. So you do the cookery exam, it depends on where it falls, but around Easter time, and then you do your written exam with all the other exams that you do in June. So that's 50% and 50%. And then I suppose people are wondering then, where does the textiles fall into that? So textiles sometimes throws people off that word. It's basically sewing. So that is part of your CBA 1, which is called creative textiles. So that's your first CBA, and your second CBA is called your food literacy brief. So they actually don't have percentages going towards them. Instead, after you do your CBA 1 and your CBA 2, you will get a descriptor. What's a descriptor? It's a one-line description of how well you did in that project. It's essentially a project. A CBA is a project. I think I'd say most students, well, first year students are even starting to hear about them now. You know, we're prepping them from early on. But I'd say any second year student or third year student listening to this will know exactly what a CBA is. It's a classroom based assessment. So yeah, you have the two of them. You have your 50% cookery. You have your 50% written exam.
That's it. Perfect. And I suppose maybe a good place to start is with the CBAs, because they are a relatively new thing, and you're after writing a guide that people, I'll link in the notes of this podcast, and people can go up and read it in more detail. But you've written guides for us on how to do well in both of the CBA 1 and CBA 2. So maybe starting with CBA 1, can you kind of give a good overview of that and maybe like your tips for doing well on that?
Yeah, no problem. So CBA1, as I was saying there, is called Creative Textiles. And I think the title of it's really important and often forgotten. So it's a project that has to be textiles based. But I think of the main things that teachers are looking for when they are assessing it is that you are creative while you're doing your project. And just to note, in relation to the CBAs, and I didn't mention this earlier, the CBAs aren't sent off anywhere. They're not sent to the Department of Education or anything like that, as your written exam would be. So what happens is they're kept within the school and your teacher assesses them or marks them. And your teacher then gives you back your descriptors. So one line of a description telling you how well you did. And then obviously you'll get feedback as well on it. So your four descriptors are below expectations, in line with expectations, above expectations, and then exceptional. So that's obviously the best one that you can get and the one that you would be aiming for. So you have to basically, you have two options and you have to kind of, you have to make a choice here. So your first option within your CBA one is you have to make a textile item for an individual or a home, option one. Option two, you can recycle or upcycle a textile item for an individual or for the home. And again, big push on creativity here as well. It's very much part of the title. So to tie that in. So, you know, what's involved in this? Craft skills, you could do some embroidery, tie-dye, crochet. That's a massive part of the project if you choose that. You do have to also submit, alongside the actual sewing part, the textile part, you have to submit a written part. And I think students often forget about the written side. They get so engulfed and so consumed and I suppose really stuck into the sewing side of things that they forget that, geez, they actually have to write up a piece on it. And when I say write up, you could type it up either. But just to be aware that they're both equally weighted and you need to do both of them as well as each other. And I find that in the past, I've noticed that students put all their effort into the sewing piece and then they leave, you know, maybe a couple of days to do the actual written piece. So just to, you know, manage your time in advance, be clever about it. So, yeah, so you have to pick option one or two. Are you going to make something from scratch? So are you going to make a cushion cover from scratch? Are you going to make a felt frame from scratch? That's option one. Or option two, are you going to maybe go down the more sustainable route and pick something that you could upcycle or recycle? So that's the big decision you need to make at the start. Then you really need to plan out your item. Step by step, how is it going to evolve and how are you going to put it together? You would need to practice all your stitches as well. Again, you do a lot of those in first year, a lot of the stitches, so it might be just a matter of recapping on them. And I should have said as well that this CBA 2 is done in second year, so you have the groundwork put in from first year. And then your written piece can be done alongside your sewing piece. You can be doing the two of them in unison. As I said, I know some people leave it to the end. It's up to the student, but it would be advised that you do it, you know, hand in hand, so that you're not, you know, when it comes to the end, you haven't forgotten everything that you've done. And then those two pieces are handed up to the teacher. So I'd say, you know, even at the minute, I started it with my second years. Like, you get a period of time to do it, a kind of a window. It's between 8 to 10 weeks. Now, that all depends on your home ec teacher. It depends on resources available in the school, i.e., can you get into the sewing room? Is there a timetable for the sewing room, etc.? So there is flexibility in that and when you do it. So we're doing it at the minute. We started just after Halloween and we're going to be running it up until Christmas and after Christmas. And you do it in class and you work on it and then your teacher will help you with whatever you need. So yeah, that's kind of the bones of it there. As I was saying, just format wise, you choose. It's up to you. And then your teacher will give you advice as well. So depending on whether you're picking option one or option two, it could take any form. Like other ideas I've seen people do is upcycling, you know, a white pair of runners or Converse and putting some designs on that. Hats, jeans, turning jeans into aprons, turning jeans into wall hangings. You can be as creative and as, I suppose, different as you like once you can do it in the time frame. I think that's the big thing. Like, we can have big, flowery, fabulous ideas, but it could take us through 2027 to get it finished. So, you know, there's no point in picking something like that. Be clever and choose something that you can do that's number one within your skill set. Obviously, you can learn other skills and add that to it. And then number two, that can be done in the time frame that your teacher gives you. So I think that's really important just to bear in mind. And then the written part that I had spoken about doesn't have to be written. Some people like to handwrite it. Some people like to type it. It's whatever. It's up to you. And again, up to your teacher as well. So it could take the format of a typed or a written booklet. It could be a written document then put into a display folder. Scrapbooks, I know a lot of students like those. Mood boards, or then people who are techie or like working on computers might like to do a PowerPoint. So yeah, it's up to the student and it's up to the teacher as well. Don't forget that the teacher does have a say in everything at the end of the day. I always get asked as well, like, how is it graded? I think students forget that there isn't a percentage going towards it, and that teachers won't be given a percentage. It's those descriptors that I was talking about. And I'm trying to think of other questions that students ask me just in relation to it. What goes into the written part or the typed part? It's called the design brief process. So it's basically a set of headings that your teacher will give you, and you have to fill in a little bit of information under each heading. And as part of the booklet or the guide that I've done out, I have put a template at the end of the guide. So students can use that template, no problem. If they want to write out the questions and the answers or type it up, whatever format they like. But usually teachers will give a very similar type template anyway. I think if I was to give advice, the best advice I could give is to be as sustainable as possible while picking your project, choosing your materials. Try and use what you already have. So have a route around the house. See what extra material is around. Is there threads that you used last year that you've left over? Has your older sister or brother got a sewing kit that's lying to one side that you could use the needles, you could use the chalk, whatever out of? Maybe your granny, your auntie is into sewing and may have materials already. I suppose we need to keep the cost down as well with the price of everything recently. And we also want to be environmentally friendly while doing so. So just to be mindful of that, we don't want anybody going buying loads of material or felt or anything like that, you know. And also, like, within your class, you could swap with your classmates. If you need red felt and your friend needs black felt and you have those things, why not do a swap? But, and just make sure it's fair, I suppose. But it's pointless going out and buying anything new when you can be as resourceful as you can within your class and within your own house at home. So being sustainable, and as I said, picking something that you can do in the time frame is massively important, and being as creative as possible. They'd be my three big pieces of advice just in relation to the CBA one. Is there anything else I'm missing there, do you think? Any other questions?
No, that's great. I was just kind of thinking of like just a general roundup of everything that you said, because like to me, listen to that now, because the CBAs came in after I did the junior cycle. It just sounds like there's a really great opportunity to be as creative as possible and like something that you could actually really enjoy doing.
Yeah, it is. It is very enjoyable.
And students should pick, like, try and think about a subject that or a CBA that they'd enjoy doing for those 8 to 10 weeks.
That is it.
And I think as well, like you said as well, I didn't know that, like, when you're saying there's a written project, in my mind, like, or a written part, that's always like having to write it down. But the fact that you have options in that as well is brilliant. Like, so I'd say,
yeah,
it's quite well, like, if you use your resources and you use your teacher, like, and you put everything into it, I think it's very easy to do well in that. And like you mentioned it there, that little template that you have at the end of your guide, like, if your teacher might have a similar one as well, but if anyone who wants to see what that template looks like, we'll have that linked in the notes, like I was saying earlier. But that's CBA one. That's the sewing. CBA two then is all the cooking practical, am I right?
Yes. Well, it is linked to the cooking practical. You are very right in that. And the briefs for it actually come out there, I think it was actually during midterm.
All right.
So they were sent out to the schools. So if you haven't already got them, you can access them through examinations.ie, the three new briefs that come out. I would say most teachers have given out the briefs. It's to third years. So CBA 2 was done in third year. And the three that were released, the first one is based on eating nutritious food on a budget. So again, no more than what I was saying back in CBA 1 there, just trying to be as mindful around money as possible and trying to use, you know, what we have. So eating on a budget. The second one then is based around fats and oils in food preparation. And then the third one is the influence of culture on food choices. So there are three very interesting briefs. So what happens is those three briefs are, generally speaking, this is what I would do, and I know a lot of teachers do this, that would be put into a hat, and then the student comes along and picks out one out of the hat. So the student would then read that assignment and try and get an idea of what is expected of them. So I suppose the class are all going to be working off different briefs. Now, you will have maybe two or three others in the class, depending on how big the class is, that it will be working with your brief as well. So it would be a good idea even for whoever is doing the same brief as you, either one, two or three, to come together and maybe do a little bit of brainstorming around what you could do. So just to be aware as well that when you are doing this CBA and when you have it completed, it's going to directly link to your cooking exam. So although there's no percentage in inverted commas going with it, going towards it, it is definitely 100% going to lay the groundwork and the foundation to your cooking exam. So it's definitely worthwhile putting as much effort into as possible, because it'll make your life a lot easier when your cooking exam comes around. If you've done this properly and you've put the time and effort into it and you've thought about the dishes involved, then, you know, your life will be more straightforward when the cookery exam comes around. So basically, there's nothing practical in this. This is a written piece that you have to fill out. So again, most people do booklets. They fill out a booklet. Again, can be typed, can be handwritten. If you want, you can put it into a scrapbook. You can put it into a PowerPoint. It's up to the teacher. I know last year with my crew, we did, I think it was typed booklets. So again, I give them a template. The template is in the CBA guide. It's at the end. So anybody can use that they want. Generally, teachers will give one out as well, and you have to fill that in. So it's research based. So you research whatever it is. So let's say we'll pick one. Let's say last year's one was on sustainability. So you had to research how sustainable practices can be followed when choosing and using food. So there's always a research piece to the start of it. And then you have to pick a dish that you researched, and you would have to prepare, cook and serve that dish. So just be careful that you read the brief properly. Some briefs require a dinner, some briefs require a lunch, some briefs require snacks, drinks. So make sure that you zone in on exactly what you're asked. So you would have to research your piece, and then you have to choose a dish to make, and that is the dish that you will be making in your cookery exam come Easter time. Mm. So choose wisely and make sure it fits the brief. Like, there's no point in saying that you're going to do a lovely beef lasagna if the brief is all about vegetarians, because obviously vegetarians can't eat beef. Yeah, so just to be mindful of that, we can get carried away with, oh, well, I love chicken curry, or I love to do a fake red taco chips, or X, Y, and Z. But if it doesn't fit the brief, there's absolutely no point in even thinking about it. So again, when do third years usually do this? So again, it's an 8 to 10 week period. It's generally done between November and March, again, depending on the school. It is out, so the CBA is out, so the briefs are out. So teachers could start working on them from now on if they would like. The format, as I said, it's up to you and it's up to your teacher, but just pick a format that suits your style the best, I suppose. What else could I say here? How are you graded on it? Your four descriptors again, and your teacher corrects it. You have to do your research piece. So I would recommend, when you're looking up your sources, so let's say you're looking up a recipe book or you're looking up websites online, that you take note of your sources, because your CBA has to be evidence-based. So it needs to be based on concrete evidence, and that's important. And when you are stating your sources of information, just to be specific, just don't throw out the name of a cookery book. Make sure that you give the author as well. So, like, for example, Nevin Maguire's Home Economics for Life by Nevin Maguire. So just to be specific, if you're using a website, to make sure you give the full URL, just to be transparent there. Technology is obviously a great way of researching, but there's nothing wrong with books either. And you might be able to use your textbooks as well, but just to be able to use a range of different sources, that's what would be important. What else could I say on this? There is a section to it that you have to give feedback. So you will, as a student, you will have to give feedback to your peers in your class on what they have chosen. And then they will give you feedback on what you have chosen. And the teacher will be chipping in on that as well. He or she will be giving feedback. So just to be mindful as well that some of this mightn't always be positive. It's constructive criticism. And your peers will be trying to help you. So I think some people get maybe a bit shocked by the comments that they get. But at the end of the day, your classmates are only trying to help you. And they may be opening your eyes to maybe things that you didn't see in the brief or things that you've overlooked. So just to be prepared for that. And I think it's a really good exercise. Some students are shocked and they kind of are taken aback at the start. But the more they get used to it, they actually enjoy it, because we're kind of working as a team. Even though we're working on our own assignments, we're working as a team to try and help each other. So that's quite a fun part. And just to be able to take that on board, and you have to note it as well as part of your written piece. You have to talk about it, what feedback you got and how you reflected on that. Just in relation to the descriptors, so your teacher will use a guide, which is called the Features of Quality, to correct your piece. And I have included a table describing or explaining the features of quality. So I've quoted what exactly is said in Features of Quality, and then I've just put it in simpler terms, because sometimes it can be a little bit hard to understand. So it's there in table format. Like, I'll give you an example. For an exceptional CBA, this piece is going to reflect a very high standard and it will be very comprehensive. So I'm just reading this off the Features of Quality, just to give you an idea. This is what we use as teachers to correct our pieces. The piece will demonstrate a very good interpretation of all aspects of the brief. So it will show that you have read the whole brief. So the brief, when I say brief, I mean the little assignment that you've picked out of the hat. So it will show that you have read it, that you understand it, and that you've taken in all areas of it, all the key sections of it. It will also, if your piece is exceptional, your research and your analysis is going to be evidence-based. So there will be very comprehensive research done and you'll be able to back it up. You will have your sources stated as well. It'll be done to a very high standard. And then the reflection, I haven't mentioned this yet, but this is just the last part of your CBA. And the reflection is really important when it comes to what descriptor you deserve or what descriptor your project deserves. And I think we're getting more used to it, especially with the new junior cycle, reflecting on our work and reflecting on our pieces. And students in third year will be very used to doing it throughout second year. But for you to get an exceptional CBA, your reflective needs to be very comprehensive. And you need to also give a very clear summary of the feedback that you got when you were doing that little peer feedback session and the teacher feedback session. You need to be able to show what your feedback was, highlight that, and also how you acted on that, how you reflected on that. It would be important as well. So another tip I would give is be familiar with them, the features of quality. And if you can't find them, they're as part of the guide there, but your teacher will have a copy of them as well, and more than likely will give you a copy or upload them onto your online forum. But it's good to be aware of them, so that it's basically success criteria, what you need to do to get the top grade.
Yeah, absolutely. All the information is there. You just have to not be afraid to go looking for it.
Exactly. Yeah.
I suppose that the CBA 2 leads itself onto nicely to the practical exam and the day of that itself. Do you have any tips for when it comes to the practical exam, the cooking?
Yes, I definitely do. There's always a million questions about the cookery exam, because I think the whole idea of you standing in a kitchen and somebody watching you cook can be very daunting, because students aren't used to it. Yeah, and it's fair enough. So if we start off, as we said, it's worth 50%. A lot. Therefore, you really need to put in the practice. You're not going to be good at cooking if you haven't put the practice in, i.e. in school, attending your cookery classes, and then whatever chance at home you can get to practice as well. The more you can get, the more experience you can get, the better. The more comfortable you feel in the kitchen. So as we were saying earlier, it's based on your CBA 2. So you have the groundwork put in from your food literacy skills brief. That's what the CBA 2 is called. And you will be preparing and cooking your, as it's called, your chosen solution, which is the dish that you picked back in your CBA 2 that best suited the brief. So that's what you are going to cook in your cooking exam. So you have to, alongside actually doing the practical exam, there is going to be an accompanying, can't say that word, short booklet that you will do, as in it's 2-3 pages max. And this booklet is excellent because students think that they have to go in and they have to know their ingredients off by heart, the method off by heart. Incorrect. You go in with this booklet and you will have all the information that you need. So you'll have your list of equipment, your list of ingredients and your quantities, and you will have your step-by-step method. So you will be able to follow that throughout your exam, and there's no problem with that. So you don't need to learn anything off by heart.
Right.
And then at the back of the short booklet, you will have a blank evaluation. The evaluation has to be done at the end of the cooking exam. So your teacher will be telling you this anyway, but the last 10 minutes of your cookery exam has to be allowed. You have to allow that 10 minutes for your evaluation. So regardless of what you have done or what you haven't done, 10 minutes at the end, you grab your pen and you start filling in your evaluation based on the food that you've tasted and the food that you've cooked in front of you. And there is marks going for the evaluation, specific marks. So I think, again, students get a little bit maybe overwhelmed or consumed in what they're doing, that they forget that that written piece has to be done at the end. So just to be aware of that. Where does the exam take place? In your kitchen, as in your school kitchen. The examiner will come in and the exam will take place in the kitchen that you are used to cooking in. How long does it last? It's an hour and a half. So the examiner is in the room for that hour and a half, but prior to that, you will get preparation time. So you have 30 minutes, or your teacher might allow you more, depending on what way the timetable is running, to let you into the kitchen, to wear out your ingredients, to get your unit set up, to get your equipment out, all that. So you have all that done. You've all that prep work done before the examiner enters the room. So it's not like you'll be in a mad fluster running around trying to find the flour and the brown sugar and trying to find a pair of weighing scales. That is all done in advance. And everything's clean and everything's tidy and you're ready to rock and roll when the examiner walks into the room. And I suppose, again, another question I get asked is, like, what does the examiner do? Well, you don't really need to worry about that as a student. The examiner will walk around. That's the main thing. And he or she will be having a look at what you're doing. They're not going to stand over you. They're not going to ask you any questions. They're not going to interfere. They are just walking around and they're there to give you marks. That's really important to remember. They are there to make the experience as streamlined as possible and they're there to give you marks. They won't talk to you. They won't interfere. They'll walk around. They'll sit down. They have loads of paperwork to do. And to be honest, you actually forget they're in the room as a student. You forget they're there. And my students have often said that to me after. Like, they'd often say, oh, well, we saw her come in and we knew she was there for the first 5 minutes. And then after that, you know, they kind of, they were in their own little bubble and they were working away. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's good. And that kind of takes the fear away when you just kind of relax and pretend that he or she isn't even in the room. Can you talk during the exam? No, you can't. Get asked that quite a bit. You cannot communicate at all. If you want something, you put up your hand, an examiner will come down to you. There's usually a banantee or a housekeeper in the room, which might be another third year student, it might be a TY student, and that student will sit up in, somewhere out of the way and will be there for help if you needed anything extra, or if, God forbid, you needed a first aid kit. That's what the banantee or the helper is there to do. Now, and just on that note, if you did cut yourself, which can happen, it's not the end of the world. You're not going to lose marks. You put up your hand, the helper will come down and the examiner will come down and you will get sorted out. Once you are hygienic in dealing with it and you get your blue plaster on, you'll be able to fly ahead then. Now, if it's a case that you can't continue with your exam, your examiner will speak to you and will deal with you, will deal with that situation as best possible. But that's something that you shouldn't have to worry about. It's not a big deal. It has happened before and it definitely won't affect your grade or your percentage. Just then, in relation to, like, if you can you change your dishes? I've got asked this as well before. If you, let's say, if you chose chicken stir fry in your CBA2 and then it came as far as your cooking exam and you wanted to change that, it's not recommended.
Right.
But you would have to speak to your teacher on that. Just in that you've put in the groundwork, you've done all that research in relation to your task. It probably would be it would be an awful lot of extra work to go and change that. But again, you could speak to your teacher on it and he or she would be able to assist you with that. Do you have to taste the food that you cook? Yes, you do have to taste the food. So you have to fill in the evaluation. That's what I was saying for the last 10 minutes. So just be aware of that you have to taste the food to be able to actually fill in the evaluation, because the evaluation, the first part of it is based on taste, texture, smell, appearance. So you need to actually put the food into your mouth to be able to do that. So, yeah, you don't need to eat the whole thing, but you definitely do need to taste it. Can you use your phone during the exam, even as a timer? No. All phones have to be left outside the room. You're not allowed a smartwatch either. So just to be aware of that. Or any kind of device, you're not allowed, unless there are allowances for that has been made. I've often got asked as well, can I take a picture of my food when I make it? Now, not during the exam, you cannot take a picture of it because you can't have your phone in the exam. But afterwards, again, if your teacher allowed it and if it's in line with your school's phone policy, you may or may not be able to take a picture of your dish. I know students are always so proud of it and they're delighted that they got through it in one piece. But just I suppose consult your teacher on that. And the then what do you do with your food after the exam? I suppose, well, either eat it or bring it home and eat it at home, but just bring a lunchbox in on the day so that you are able to bring it home.
Yeah,
they're usually my top kind of few questions that I get asked every year. Is there anything else, any other questions there that I've missed out on?
I was just going to ask, I know you touched on it a little bit, like the nerves that students feel on the day, but like on the day, what are the things that you tell your students to hopefully make them feel less nervous?
Yeah, I suppose just to take a deep breath. Mm. Like breathing can settle us when we get ourselves into a little bit of a fluster, just to take a deep breath. Say to yourself, I'm prepared, I am well able, and this is going to be a success. And the examiner is going to love my food. I think we have to be our own best friend in our head and speak very nicely to ourselves, because I think we could be very critical and we don't want to self-sabotage even before we step foot in the kitchen. So just to speak very nicely to ourselves and to remember that we have put in the preparation. Everything is in front of us there. Our ingredients are ready to go. Our method is by our side. And all we have to do is follow it step by step and just to keep an eye on the time and to try and ignore everybody else around you, pretend nobody else is in the room, and go into your own little bubble and pretend you're in your own kitchen at home.
Yeah,
that's what I would say. And just to relax and enjoy it, because it'll probably be the first and the last cooking exam you'll ever have to do in your life, unless you go to St. Angela's, and you have to do one every year.
And that was something you said earlier as well, as something about preparation. That's when myself and Emer, when we're on the Normal Stoiclips podcast and we're just talking about dealing with exam nerves, the thing is that like the more prepared you are, the less nervous you're going to feel. So coming exactly. back to that point you made before, is just you prepare your dish as much as possible and you'll feel more confident then on the day, knowing that you'll be able to nail it, you know.
100%. And even practice how you're going to serve it up, you know, so that it looks attractive. What are you going to garnish it with? That's really important as well. You know, have you seasoned it? Does it taste the way it should taste? And you will only know that if you have practiced it before. So any chance you get, like in school, unfortunately, we may only be able to practice the dish once with students. Again, it's because we're very short on time, and especially with 1 hour classes, it can be tight.
Yeah.
But there's no excuse for you then to go home and practice your dish at home or in your granny's house or your auntie's house or anybody's kitchen, really, that you can get a hold of. I would get in there and get practicing. So I think prepare for the exam, and that will definitely lighten the load and take away some of that worry.
100%. So yeah, I think that those are the CBAs and the practical exam out of the way. We'll come on to the written part, or just the actual studying, because my next question is that like home ec for both junior cert and living cert, but we're talking about junior cert as well, it's very content heavy, and when students are studying it they might like feel overwhelmed by all the information that's in it. So what are your general study tips for the exam, and like what would you say are like the most important topics that you feel are like you'd want to have a good grasp of those ones?
Okay, yeah. So the exam is an hour and a half long, and I think you need to be familiar with the layout of the exam, first of all, and the different sections. So you have section A, and section A is worth 80 marks, and there's 10 short questions on that. Then you have section B, and that is worth 240 marks, and then there's 3 longer style questions on that. So like what topic comes up in what section, you can't really say, because any topic could come up in any section. Now, the difference between section A and section B would be section A is short, and it kind of demands those kind of more precise answers. So you might be asked to state or to identify something. So definitions would be quite important here. So, for example, I suppose give the definition or explain the word cross-contamination, for example. Or another one that came up on the 2022 paper was identify 2 ways in which a person's diet can affect their teeth. So it's not asking you to elaborate or explain, but you are asked short and precise questions. So that would be Section A. Section B is a different ball game. Section B definitely requires longer answers. So verbs like describe, explain, give an account of, that's what would come up in Section B. Another question just I would get asked in relation to these sections is, do I have a choice? Like, can I pick between different questions? No, you don't have a choice. You have to do all the questions. So 10 short questions in Section A and then your three longer questions in Section B. Now, the longer questions have subparts. So usually they'll have an A, B, C, D and an E, for example. And they'll generally be based around the same topic. So let's say you might have a long question on digestion. You might have a long question on nutrition in relation to toddlers. Okay. What was the other question you asked me? What topics is it?
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, what are the most common topics that you're like saying it would be really important to have the best understanding of these ones because they come up a lot, you know, that kind of a way.
Yeah. Hard question. Definitely nutrition.
Yeah.
You need a really, really good understanding of nutrition, a really good foundation in nutrition, because you can always tie nutrition into loads of different answers. And it will help you then if you want to take on leaving cert home ec, that foundation in nutrition is really, really handy. I would definitely know my food pyramid inside out, because you can refer to that. Healthy eating guidelines, I'd be up to date on those as well. What else? Sustainability is really, really important in recent times, and being environmentally friendly. So I would definitely be on the ball with how to be, let's say, more sustainable in the kitchen, in relation to food, even in relation to electricity. How can we cut down on our electricity use? How can we be more sustainable in relation to water? Those types of things. Apart from that, your food commodities are very important as well. Commodities are just your food. So your meat section, your meat poultry chapter, your cereals chapter, all those different foods can come up in different areas of the paper. So I'd definitely be on the ball with those as well. And there's always nutrition tied into that end, into those types of questions also. Trying to think now, what else would be really important? There's always textile questions asked. So that would tie into your CBA 1, for example. You might be given care label symbol, like a little picture of an iron with maybe 1, 2 or 3 dots in it, and you have to explain what that is. It's very hard to, because I always get asked as well, can I leave out X, Y and Z chapter? You can't really, because you just don't know what way it's going to come up. So yeah, I definitely wouldn't be leaving anything out, but if I was to zone in on an area, I would definitely be zoning in on nutrition, because it comes up in loads of different parts of the paper.
Yeah, it's quite a sizable part of the course as well, isn't it?
It is massive. Yeah, it is massive, in fairness, yeah. And just another one that popped into my head there as well, like special diets, you know. So let's say celiac, diabetes, or diabetic, a vegan, a vegetarian, etc. Like, they come up quite often as well, questions on those. Like, for example, being able to adapt a meal for a vegetarian, you might be given... there's a lot of pictures given as well. So you might get a picture of stir fry and asked, how can you adapt this stir fry for a vegetarian? You would leave out, I suppose, the beef would be the first thing you could say, and maybe replace it with another alternative, a protein alternative. And then another thing you often get asked is to do a menu. And I think menus seem like they're a walk in the park, but it's just important to get the structure of the menu right and the layout of the menu right. So just to be on the ball with those as well, to get that right, would be important too.
Yeah, absolutely. So then when I was like thinking of, like, especially with nutrition, because especially if you're starting with that, so you see a lot of like the numbers and think like so much of the information is overwhelming. What do you think there's like a certain way of learning it? I suppose it all depends on each student, but
yeah,
would you say it's just a case of practicing questions as much as possible, or reading your textbook, or what kind of study tips would you give to students?
Yeah, you're right. Definitely right in that, I suppose, there's different students have different learning techniques. So I'm a visual learner, but I know there's other people out there that could be kinesthetic learners. Some people learn by listening. So you need to find your way, first of all. But I know mind maps are an excellent way of learning your information. So what I would do is I get the textbook, get the section that you have to do, and say it's on protein. And then protein might be over 3 or 4 pages. So an idea would be to take that information and condense it down onto one mind map on one A4 page, whether it be putting it into your folder, into your hardback, and bullet point everything. The only way to learn anything is when it's short and concise. If you're looking at a big paragraph or an essay on something, it's going to confuse you, and it's going to overwhelm you, which is even worse. So definitely to condense down your information, put it into a mind map, have a look over it, read over it. And then you were saying as well, to practice exam questions, that's a big one. And study clicks, no better resource to do that, because you can go in, you can pick your areas, whether it be sustainability, whether it be technology in the home, digestion, click on it, and then up comes all your relevant questions based on that topic. So it's excellent. And then underneath, you can click on your view marking scheme. I was using it today with my second years. We were getting ready for a November assessment. And it is excellent. So, so handy. So that's the way I would approach it. But definitely find what suits you as a learner and go down that line. Go try and suit yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's like the most important thing. Everyone's different. And
everyone's different. Yeah.
Use study clicks as much as possible.
Yeah. And the quizzes that are available on it. But like, aside from that, go to class. Because if you're not in class, you know, attendance is massive. If you're in class and you're listening and you're taking notes, you're highlighting, or you're getting involved, that's half the battle. Like, engage. And, you know, if you're doing group work, take part in the group work. Be active in it. If you are confused about something, put up your hand and ask the question. There's never, ever a stupid question. And oftentimes, if it's in your head and you want to ask it, it's probably in 5 or 6 other students' heads and they're just afraid to ask.
Yeah.
So being in the classroom and taking part is massive. You can do as much work as you want at home, but why not set the foundation and set the bar high as well by getting into class and soaking it all up?
Exactly. That was going to actually be my next question, was that, do you have any classroom learning tips? Because I think you can just sit there and listen all you want, but if it's when you're actively trying to engage your brain and take part in the class, that's when you start kind of remembering the information. So yeah, like you said, ask questions, take part in group activities.
Group work.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And some students like taking notes. And even though it might be in front of them, but they might want to jot down a few pointers into their hardback as the lesson is going along. You can do that. You could do even a brainstorm on the lesson. You know, it doesn't have to be line after line after line. You could do like a kind of a spider diagram. And as you're going through each section, you could just even write down words, the most important word in each sentence or in each section that was read through. I think it definitely kind of keeps you on the ball, keeps you focused, and keeps you tied into the actual topic in hand. And then just to try, you know, mix it up. And I know a lot of students, or a lot of teachers I should say, have gone back to group work because, you know, we don't have those restrictions anymore with COVID, and just to be involved in that and take part. Don't sit back and let everybody else do the work. You're not going to learn from that.
Exactly.
You're going to learn if you put your bit in and you help, you get involved. And the class flies by as well. And it definitely becomes more enjoyable than when you're sitting back on your tod and not doing anything.
That's so true. Time goes most slow when you're just waiting for it to pass and not actually taking part.
Yeah, definitely.
I was going to come back to the written exam there. This is kind of a question I would ask a lot of teachers. Like, do you have any do's and don'ts when it comes to the written exam?
Yeah.
You know, those general tips that like your mom would give you, like, oh, make sure you read the question properly and all this kind of a thing. But yeah, do you have any general tips that when it comes to the whole MEC exam?
Yes, I do. Use a blue or a black pen.
Okay.
Do not write in red pen or orange pen. It's really hard to read. So make sure your writing is really clear. There's nothing worse. And I know some students can't help it, but just be mindful that somebody has to read through that. And you want to be able to get as many marks as possible, so write as clearly as you can. if you're doing any sketches or any diagrams, don't do them in pen, do them in pencil, and that allows you then to erase if you need to. Don't leave anything blank.
Yeah, big one.
That's a big one, definitely. Because examiners hate to see it, first of all. Teachers definitely hate to see it. And I think it gives off the wrong message. Instead of giving off the message, well, I don't know the answer, it comes across, well, to me anyways, well, I couldn't be bothered. Mm. I'm just skipping past that. I don't care. So that's definitely not how you want to portray yourself in any exam. So you need to keep the examiner sweet, and you need to look like you have put in 100% effort and you couldn't have done any more with that paper.
If you're
not sure of an answer and you want to leave, you know, if you want to skip past it, that's fine and that's okay, but just make sure you come back to it. And often what happens is, like, you might be going through the rest of your paper and then something might, you know, another question might spark off an answer, and then you can run back to it and fill it in. But definitely don't leave it blank. You can't get marks for a blank answer. You might get a temp mark if you put something in. What else would I say? I would say, where possible, make reference to the healthy eating guidelines and make reference to your food pyramid, especially in relation to any nutrition questions. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, you could say, I've included 3 low-fat dairy products in this menu. Say you were doing a menu and you said, I've included 3 low-fat dairy products in this menu. And say the menu's for an adult, a sedentary adult. And your reason behind that could be because the food pyramid recommends 3 servings from this dairy shelf per day, so that the calcium levels are kept high. So you're referring there to your food pyramid, and you're tying in that kind of concrete evidence as to why you actually included these dairy products in your menu, because you have a reason and you are right. The food pyramid, that's what the food pyramid demands. So it's showing that you have, you're kind of tying in your information and your knowledge from all areas of the course to answer these questions. But I suppose it's your time to shine. You may as well write down everything that you can get across, obviously, that's relevant to the question. What else? Oh, just with, if you're not asked for an example, which you mightn't be in a question, I would give it anyway, because examples are great in that they back up your answer. And examiners love to see examples because it shows that you actually understand the question. So give examples regardless of whether you're asked or not. And last thing I would say, if you go blank, that's okay. It happens to the best of us. So don't panic.
Yeah.
Just take a deep breath, read the question again. If you haven't already highlighted the keyword, go and highlight it. Write down whatever comes into your head in relation to that question, and then try and formulate it into a sentence. But panicking is not going to get you anywhere. You have enough time. An hour and a half is plenty of time. So just reboot, relax, take a deep breath, read the question. Like, sometimes I have to read questions 3 and 4 times, even myself, to get my head around it. That's normal. That's okay. These answers aren't going to just come to you like light bulbs. Okay. Sometimes you need that extra little bit of time, and that is totally fine. Don't be hard on yourself.
Yeah.
That's really it. That would be my advice.
That's really it. I was going to just ask if you had any final tips just on the subject itself. Anyone going into, whether they're in first or second or third year doing home ec, what would your parting words be for the podcast?
Yeah, embrace it, I think. Embrace all elements of it.
Yeah.
A lot of students say, well, I'm rubbish at sewing.
Yeah.
You know, if you're telling yourself you're rubbish, well, then you're going to be rubbish. So, again, speak nicely to yourself and welcome it with open arms. Give it a go. You never know. Practice makes perfect. You may improve. You may not improve. But you might actually find something that you love, whether it be, might be embroidery stitches, might be tie-dye, might be knitting. But don't go in with that closed mindset, because it's not going to get you anywhere. And also, don't go in with the notion that you're going to be cooking every hour of every day and that you're going to be in the kitchen making lovely, sweet chocolate brownies in every class. Unfortunately, there is a massive course to be covered. So just bear that in mind. The teachers can't bring you into the kitchen every single class, but they will bring in as much as possible. And that when you are in the kitchen, that you can't always be making you know, sweet things or something that you want to make, you have to try and cover a range of different things: savory dishes, chicken dishes, vegetarian dishes, dishes including fruit and veg. So there is, I suppose, there's a couple of different boxes that we need to tick as teachers to help you get prepared for your cookery exam. So just trust in that as well. And I suppose the last thing I'd say is believe in yourself, because when you believe in yourself, you're halfway there. And if you have that confidence in yourself, you will go a long way.
That's wonderful. That's such lovely, nice words or ending words for the podcast. Linda, I think we'll wrap it up there. I have nothing more to say, only that those were just amazing tips. You are an absolute fountain of knowledge. I loved my home ec teacher, but I also wish you were my home ec teacher.
Thanks. You give me a big head now.
That was really, really great. So yeah, like we said, everything that Linda said there, if you'd like to, if you prefer it written down, Linda also wrote a guide to Junior Cert Home Ec that I've linked in the show notes of this podcast. You'll be able to find that there and read back on it anytime. The templates that she referred to, you can find those in there as well. And if you'd like, Linda's one of the first people we've got on to do one of these kind of teacher interviews, a subject expert telling us about how to do the very best you can the subject. So if you have any suggestions for a subject expert that you'd like us to get on in another subject, and now Linda, you were saying you do Irish as well, so we might have you back on. But just contact us, studyclicks at info@studyclicks.ie, or on any of our social media channels. We're StudyClicks everywhere. And if you, just a final bit of housekeeping from the StudyClicks podcast, if you found this podcast helpful, leave us a review wherever you're listening, and maybe recommend us to a friend, because that just really, really helps us spread the word and helps people do the very best they can in their Junior Cert Home Ec. So yeah, just thanks again so much, Linda, for coming on to the podcast, and it was great chatting to you.
No problem, Nessa. Thanks a million for having me. Thank you.
Bye now. Bye.